The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 493, recorded on February 20th, 2018.
Welcome to the 493rd edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 326th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
I am Jonah Papp.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and a gaming flashback.
So, this is the second try at episode 493. The first one was just unlistenable. The second one only recorded my voice, so I sounded like a crazy person talking to people only I could hear. So this is going to be the third. This is going to be the third attempt. This time we're going to actually have backup.
Yes, yes. I have the software, but I don't usually keep it up, just because you guys usually both record.
Yeah.
I forgot that Scott's doing it on his phone now, so.
Well, he's doing it from his phone, so he can't record. So anyway. What have we been playing? I'll start. I started playing Prey, and it wants to be System Shock 2 so badly you can taste it. I mean, for Christ's sakes, one of the codes for the doors is 0451, which appears in all Irrational games as a reference to Fahrenheit 451. The problem is that they don't know anything about level design. Say what you want about System Shock 2, it kept you moving forward. There was only a few key cards and a few codes. This one, you're constantly stopping because it demands you have to have a key card or a code. You know, there's no exploration. It's funneling you in a direction that you have to get because there are too many locked doors and the level design is confusing. So, yeah, it's well made, but it's not very well planned.
Hmm.
You know.
That's disappointing, because it's basically supposed to be, well, besides being a remake of the very old Prey.
It's not. It's not even close to being Prey. Prey was about a Native American boy who gets kidnapped by aliens. This has nothing to do with that. I get the feeling that Arkane made a game, and Bethesda said, listen, we got to use this Prey thing, so let's just change the name to Prey.
Yeah, which is like mildly disappointing. The only really connective tissue I could see between the two, because, I mean, in that, a lot of people liked that original Prey, and especially Native Americans liked it because it was very true to spiritualism. Like, they tried to go out of their way to actually be respectful of both the modern culture of Native Americans and a little bit of their history.
On the other hand, so, this game has something rare. It has an Asian, and it's an American game with an Asian protagonist.
Yeah, so that really is the only connective tissue, is that it has a ethnic protagonist that you don't usually see in a center role in video games these days. But, I mean, that's like, I don't know.
I wouldn't be surprised to find out this takes place in the future of Dishonored, because all the characters have that Dishonored look.
Yeah, they do. Arkane has always had a very distinct character design about them that is, like, the faces are almost sort of clay-ish, if that makes sense.
Sort of, like, they, cartoonish.
Yes.
I will almost say, like, this, though. I'm not going to give it away, but the opening 15 minutes is a great mindfuck.
Yeah,
that's how you're able to use the devices that give you skills.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in that game, and you know, I mean, even if it tries to mimic System Shock, it does have some things about it that are pretty interesting in its own right. Have you morphed into a coffee cup yet?
Hmm. Oh yeah, the mimics. Oh, I haven't done that yet, no. Oh, that's the other thing, is that I'm really having to learn how to use these weapons. Using the goo gun to stop sparks and fires is something that comes important later in early in the game that I've had to figure out. I'm also using learning to use the fabrication machine. One of the more grisly things is there's a ball of organic material, and a note reads that this woman says, just for an object lesson, this ball is what used to be my foot because I had an accident. So just keep that in mind.
They don't pull any punches when it comes to, like, sort of the grisly stuff. I mean, anyone who knows of Dishonored knows about the rats and just, like, how often you can use them to just annihilate people.
Yeah. So, Scott, what have you been playing?
I've been playing a little bit of Rogue Galaxy, a little bit of Dark Cloud 3, and, of course, the Civilization Rise and Fall expansion, where I've been playing as the Scots, because my name is Scott, and I've always liked having a playing civilization with my name in it, so it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm actually playing a game right now. I'm the Americans. But I'm finally getting deep into the game, because with me in Civilization, it's sort of like I get to a certain point, then I just say, oh, whatever, and I just start over again. What's nice is that this game, they haven't really assaulted my country with religion, and I realized why. Apostles are very expensive now. They cost 2.5 more times than they used to. Like, it now takes 400 faith to buy an apostle. And, of course, every time you buy one, it increases in cost. So that's one way. And if I see an apostle wandering around my cities, he doesn't do anything. Enemy apostles don't really do anything. So it's nice to see that one of the most annoying aspects of the game has been toned down. The apostles don't harass you, do they?
They have actually gotten into my cities and converted some of my faith. But you can, like I said, you know, build more holy sites, get more faith income, and buy your own apostles and inquisitors and gurus and go
do
theological
warfare. Yeah, but even when they do it, they don't really attack me. So I've lucked out there. I have had a game in which I could not create a religion.
Oh, I hate that, yeah.
But I like
the ages that the game has introduced in this expansion pack, where you have to earn era points by doing events that appear on your timeline, and you got like there's a whole slew of different things you can use or get to get era points, and it's in the Civilpedia, and it'll list all of them, you know, from discovering natural wonders to getting eurekas to making trade routes to killing barbs.
I discovered the
whole bunch.
The thing that you really have to do is be the first one to build a naval unit. That gets you 3 era score if you're the first person in the world to build one.
Yeah. Stuff like that. Yeah, a lot of first things would get you a lot of points.
Well, if you're the first in the world to do it, you get +1 in era score.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have you had a heroic age yet?
Yes, I have. I went through a dark age, which wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be.
No, I mean, here's the thing. If I'm turtling, then screw it. I'll just put the isolationist dark age thing up, and that gets me by. But heroic age, it allows you to pick 3 out of 4 aspects that'll give you era score, which is nice.
It is very awesome. And I like the UI changes each era that you're in, so that makes it really
interesting. Yeah, if it's Dark Age, it's sort of like there's sort of like a cloudy, you know, sort of cloudier, and the ball is black.
Yeah.
If you're in a Golden Age, it's brighter, and if you're in Heroic Age, everything is golden.
Yeah, everything's much brighter, and like I think white, the title bar is very white, and just. You get more loyalty, of course, so that's always a good way if you want to push out your loyalty into other civs and try to flip their cities.
Yeah, I haven't flipped any cities yet.
Yeah, that's always been a tricky mechanic for me to master. And I know in Civ 4, you could flip entire civilizations.
You just get the gold here. You're with us now.
Well, that was Civ 2. You could buy cities.
Buy them. Or it's Civ 1. Oh, you like that city? Well, guess what? I'm paying for it. And... I'm making money in hand over fist in this game too. So
that's crazy. Yeah, well, you can get a lot of trade routes. That helps a lot.
Yeah. With my particular playthrough, I'm actually low on culture. I haven't been able to generate much culture. And I think the reason is that my starting position doesn't really allow for the building of many monuments. Great wonders, I mean. So it's like...
Well, you can build... I think it's entertainment plazas, so you can
get... Yeah, I know that, but
artists.
That comes later in the game. I mean, for a long time, I wasn't able to do that. And basically what I did was I focused on science instead. Science and some religion, and
yeah.
That's gotten me by.
I usually focus on science anyhow.
Actually, you know, it's funny. Early in the game, I usually focus on religion just to get those bonuses quickly.
Yeah. They are nice to get. What else was I? Yeah, I like that there's new natural wonders and new world wonders, too. I like the Statue of Liberty. That's nice. I built Statue of Colossus and Statue of Liberty in the same city. So now there's like two... bronze, copper statues next to my city, or you know, they're on either side of my harbor. So I just think that looks good.
TJ, have you been playing the expansion?
I haven't gotten back into Civilization VI in a while, just because I've been moving all over the place on different projects and things.
I will say this. The expansion gives more of everything that you have to think about. But it doesn't quite seem to improve it that much. It improves it in the idea that you're doing more, and they also obviously tweak some of the stuff that's been annoying fans. I mean, now Cassus Belli is mean something.
I think that's the difference between this game and we've touched on this before with previous Civilization games. When previous Civilization games had expansions... It was expansions that were fixing massively broken parts of the game. This is just like a straight up proper expansion. It doesn't fix anything. It's just more stuff to do, which is like it's saying something about how far the series has come that they actually made a full Civilization game that all they had to do was just add more cool stuff to it.
You know, actually, now that I think about it, it could have been that they were planning to do a patch that was going to fix some of the stuff that was annoying people, but they realized in order to fix it, they'd have to alter other things, and they said, you know what, screw it. We're just going to make an expansion that'll allow us to change some of the things that fans want to change, because they're not game breakers. They're not even... They're more like minor annoyances, like Cassus Belli's really didn't do that much. You'd have Civilization storming you with eight apostles. You know, now apostles don't come as fast. You know, they're harder to get, which is nice. And I like the fact they added something called a guru, and the guru's job is just to heal other religious units. So that when you have your apostles getting into these little battles, you can have a guru heal them.
What's also interesting about this is you can play with the previous rule set if you want to play.
Yeah, turned off. So I
thought that was interesting that option is in there.
Well, you can just straight up turn off expansions and play vanilla.
Yeah, I don't think I will be turning the rule set off.
Yeah, you can say like you say start a map with the Rise and Fall rule set or with the original rule set.
Oh no, it's just like any DLC. You can turn off civilizations that are DLC as well. You know, and the Rise and Fall expansion is just another DLC that you can turn on or off.
Well, that's pretty neat.
Yeah, but here's the thing: there's nothing that I would want to make me play original vanilla Civ 6. Because, like I said, there was a lot of annoyances in Civ 6 that kept me from really just playing hours upon hours like Dan does. How many hours has Dan Quick played? 900 so far in Civ 6?
I'd have to ask, but probably...
Well, you could always check just by looking at his... How many hours have you played?
At 88 now, or
88
so.
88 hours? That's it?
Yeah, well, I haven't played as much. I've been playing other games.
Yeah.
But with the expansion, I think that'll change.
I have like 300 hours now. Maybe 350.
Wow. I couldn't possibly have more than 40 hours, but maybe that's even being generous.
I haven't played as much as I could, but it's one of those games in which if it's late at night, I don't want to turn on my console. I just want to play something on my PC. Oh, I'll just play some turn-based Civ 6. I mean, normally I would may play Papers, Please, but that's more involved, and you have to have your wits about you. You know, it's a timed game. Civ is not a timed game. I will say this, though. Yeah. I'm no longer playing on online speed. Now I'm playing on regular speed, because if you play on online speed, it makes getting a golden age or even just a regular age a little bit harder, because here's the thing, you know, you're getting your civs faster, you're getting your techs faster, and the eras are based on the age that you're in, you know, stone, industrial, medieval, whatever. And when you're doing your techs faster, you're getting into your next age faster. Unfortunately, and you're doing a lot fewer battles, because when you're playing at a regular speed, there's a lot more that can happen between units being built and civs and sciences being made, you know. So there's less battles when you're playing an online version. Even though you're getting units faster, you're not doing a lot more battles, ironically, because of that, you know.
So Dan is doing 540 hours of Civ 6 so far. I just checked the profile thing.
Let me check my handy dandy little calculator. 540 divided 10. By 24. He's played 22.5 days of Civ 6.
I have a measly 10 hours.
Aw. Well, like I said, you know, you're busier doing reviews and stuff. As a matter of fact, TJ was doing the call out for Twin Galaxies and trying to find a writer for that.
Yeah. I don't really try to push my work here, but I'm the senior editor for Twin Galaxies. So
Yeah, he doesn't have anything to do with the records. That's one big mess right now.
Yeah, there is a storm.
Here's the thing. Anything that says that it was checked by a referee, just assume it was fixed and toss it out. Only things that were absolutely verifiable, and if they want to, just play it again. Because one of the funny things is that I forgot the guy's name. Not the guy who was in The King of Kong. No, I'm talking about this other guy who claimed to have the world record in barnstorming.
That was Todd Rogers.
Yeah, and they proved it was impossible, the time he claimed. Because they had a what's called a technical speed run, in which you have the computer, you set up programming so that it does as fast as possible, even faster than a human could do. And they discovered it is physically impossible to get the score that he did.
Yeah, and I have a mile worth of opinions about Todd Rogers and Billy Mitchell, but
here's the thing. Really don't care about Billy Mitchell. I mean, he cultivates his image as a creep so much that I really don't consider him a creep. he loves being a villain, so he acts like a villain.
Yeah, I mean, that's a role he seems to embrace. Which, goodbye him.
he's playing the heel in a wrestling league.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm surprised he didn't grow one of those long mustaches so he could twirl it.
I will say this. People so for clarification, Twin Galaxies editorial, which is what I'm a part of, is very different from Twin Galaxies adjudication, who are the people that handle the scoreboards and handle the disputes. As far as this goes, this is my opinion, no one else's. Billy Mitchell has the 13th place record in the world on Donkey Kong. Robbie Lakeman has had the record since last December. At this point, people are fighting for a 13th place, and they want Steve Weeb to be called the King of Kong, but Steve Weeb was already ahead of Billy Mitchell at 12th place with a score ahead of us.
He already had a movie for him, so he was the star of a documentary. He's fine.
Like, Todd Rogers was a big deal because that guy was legitimately sitting on the first place in a lot of different places where it didn't seem like that should be.
He was legitimately sleepy, yes.
People are mad over a 13th place spot now, and I mean, whatever. If it's fake, it should be removed. If it's not, it shouldn't. But I don't know.
At least Billy Mitchell can say that they sort of made a version of him in Pixels, played by I forgot his name already. Damn.
Well, there's a lot of forgettable things about Pixels. Oh my god.
Yeah, I know. It's on the tip of my tongue, and I completely forgot his name. Excuse me. Otherwise, I was about to say Warwick Davis, but that's wrong.
That would be terrible.
What's wrong with Warwick Davis?
What?
Just because he's another little person that's also famous doesn't mean you should call him that. No, one that's not
very,
him.
They're also very different ages, too.
Uh-huh. Are you talking about Peter Dinklage?
Warwick Davis is
Peter Dinklage. Younger. Scott with the assist. Yes, Peter Dinklage.
Yeah, Peter Dinklage. I should have thought of the station agent, which was his first big role, so to speak.
But yeah, so...
By the way, I don't watch Game of Thrones, just so you know. I know about the Red Wedding.
You haven't read it either, I assume.
I mean, I watched Rome, and that was gory enough for me. That's a while ago, actually. I think that's more than 15 years.
It's been a bit.
Anyways, what have you been playing, TJ?
So, I've been on the rise in Dragon Ball FighterZ.
Sorry to interrupt you. Speaking of on the rise, I came in third in the world in Cooking Dash in the latest thing, and the only reason why I wasn't number one was because the last venue was a venue that I did not own.
Nice.
I would have been first in the world. I was first in the world in four of the venues leading up to it, too. So, I'm taking my casual games very seriously, folks.
That's pretty good.
So, you were saying you're moving up in the ranks in Dragon Ball FighterZ.
Yeah, I'm sitting at Supreme Kai right now, which is like, I don't know. There's a bunch of different titles that they have for the rankings in that game in lieu of, like, gold or silver or whatever. I would say that Supreme Kai is probably gold tier, but I'm sitting at the top end of that, and people are tough up there. But there's also, like, Dragon Ball FighterZ is such a weird game because it's so... Every character has very similar things going on, but are just slightly different enough that good players can figure out those nuances and do crazy things with them. Other players use the same tricks that they learned when they started the game, and it's kind of infuriating sometimes.
Yeah. By the way, you know that one of our items is actually is going to be talking about Dragon Ball FighterZ. We're not going to spoil it yet.
Other than that, I've been hitting local arcades a little bit more often and playing around out there. I recently went out to meet up with this crew about a certain arcade called Killer Queen. Have you guys seen the, not the song? It's a so basically this game, it's a new
under in a pretty cabinet.
Not quite. I always think of that song when I see the game though. But so basically the idea behind this is that it's a double set of arcade cabinets and it's five player versus five player joust.
Wow. Oh, joust? Ooh. As in riding the flying ostrich joust?
Yes.
Wow.
That's cool.
And the idea behind it is that each side has a queen and a bunch of little minions that can run around and either collect berries and bring them back to the hive and try to score an economic victory. There's a snail on the bottom of the screen that you can ride into a goal on either side. Or you can win by killing the enemy team's queen by either the queens can fight each other or the little minions can jump into little caskets and turn into warriors. And so there's a lot of things going on in it. It's got joust qualities. It's got similar qualities to the original Mario Brothers with the pipes and the platforms. It's really interesting, and it's really fast-paced, and it was really fun. And I'll be doing a feature on those guys pretty soon, because apparently there are leagues all over the nation. Like, they were talking about Chicago, Minneapolis, New York, Dallas, a few other places as well. It's kind of like you guys know Golden Tee and Golden Strike. People set up leagues around those games, and they actually compete, like – they actually travel to compete in those games, and this is similar to that. But yeah, it's one of the more fun games I've ever seen leagued up like that.
You know, I'm looking at these casting notices. They want a Frank Sinatra impersonator and a Dean Martin impersonator for an award show, and I'm trying to figure out which award show that might be. Maybe it's the Oscars. Who knows? They're celebrating the Rat Pack. It could be the Oscars, actually, now that I think about it. Anyways, so you know, actually, it's kind of a nice little segue, because we're going to talk about our, I just lost myself. Oh, there we go. We're actually going to, our first gaming flashback is Rock Band. Rock Band is a music video game developed by Harmonix, published by MTV Games and Electronic Arts. Rock Band allows up to 4 players to simulate the performance of popular rock songs by playing with controllers modeled after musical instruments. Players can play the lead guitar, the bass guitar, the drums, as well as sing through a USB microphone. Although the game did come with a USB microphone. And actually, I prefer using that USB microphone to an actual USB microphone. I don't know, it sounded better, you know. Players are scored on their ability to match scrolling musical notes while playing instruments, or by their ability to match the singer's pitch on vocals. Which means if you wanted to, you could just hum. I didn't do that, but you could technically hum. And so long as you're at the right pitch, it would score. Players with the Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3 versions can interact with players on the same platform, both online and offline multiplayer capabilities. Rock Band has up to 3 tracks of vertically scrolled music notes, 1 section for lead guitars, drums, and bass. The color notes on screen correspond to the buttons on the guitar and drum peripherals. For lead and bass guitar, players play the notes by holding down the colored fret buttons on the guitar while pushing the controller's strum bar. For drums, you just basically hit the drum heads, or step on the pedal to simulate the bass drum notes. Along the top of the screen is the vocal display, which scrolls horizontally, similar to Karaoke Revolution. The lyrics display beneath the green bars, which represent the pitch of the individual vocal elements. When singing vocals, the player must sing in relative pitch to the original vocals. A pitch indicator displays the singer's accuracy relative to the original pitch. The remainder of the screen was used to display the band's virtual characters as they perform in concert. And one of the biggest things about that was they were completely customizable, as well as creating your own rock band, literally. So it was fun creating your character and watching him rock on screen. And there was even a campaign RPG mode in which you could take your band throughout all these venues, which I did a lot of. Although I did play a lot online, because here's the thing. I could do on hardest level any vocals. And the thing is, you know, that game, no one ever wants to do the vocals. So I'd say, yeah, I'll do it. You can play with the guitars, you can play with the drums, I'll do the vocals. In addition to the 58 chorus songs included on the game disc, over 2,000 downloadable songs were released for the Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3 versions. And when you went to Rock Band 2 and 3, you had to pay something like $5 to import them. And the only reason why you had to do that was because they had to pay for the licensing fees. Because from game to game to game, you have to pay those music fees.
Mm-hmm.
The singing was better than in other games like Karaoke Revolution, because here's a little dirty little secret with games like Karaoke Revolution. They're for girls, and the pitch is always higher. So
yeah, I can see that.
So yeah, SingStar. This was the game most used by people who were drinking a little. It was a perfect party game. I mean, this is the game you could. This is the casual game that anybody could enjoy.
Yeah, I like the guitar part. I like the drums part. You're right about the vocals part. My wife has most of the SingStar collection, and I hate those games.
Because you find your voice cracking because it's asking you to play I recently found out, by the way, I sing in the key of G, but a lot of those games they sing in the key of woman.
I'm capable of matching a lot of pitches.
It hurts when you're doing SingStar or Karaoke Revolution.
Well, the thing is that I do regular karaoke, like a lot of the time.
Yeah, and you said this in the abandoned podcast. You don't want to be fenced in. You want to improvise.
I like to freestyle a bit. I like to throw my own parts in. I like to have fun because that's what singing is about. And if it sounds good, that's what
rock band's about.
Well, guess what, TJ? My song was on VH1, so there. I beat you there.
I like the idea of Rock Band just because, like,
draw out the lines.
What's that?
You can't draw outside the lines with this game.
Yeah,
well,
that's what
not
I hate about
true.
It.
You do have the moments in which you can improv. There are moments in the thing in which you can do what you want for bonus points, you know. But generally, yeah, you have to play the song.
Well, maybe I don't think that Cat Stevens sang it the way it should be sung. Maybe I want to sing it my way.
Yeah, but here's the thing. The songs always say, in the style of.
I want to sing, that's one of my favorite songs, and I just blanked on it. Sweet Dreams. I want to sing Sweet Dreams the Marilyn Manson way, not the other way.
You know that reminds
me. Lennox way.
I actually don't know which I prefer, the original Phil Collins Genesis version of State of Confusion or the Disturbed version of State of Confusion.
They're both pretty good in their own right. They're both pretty good in their own right.
Disturbed did a very good cover of Sound of Silence, which I really liked.
I'm
not a Disturbed fan, by the way.
I'm not a huge Spawn fan, but I do like the
Todd McFarlane, the cartoon with Land of Confusion, yeah.
Yeah.
But I also like I forgot the name of the puppets in Land of Confusion, because they're actually a UK thing. Splitting Image puppets.
Yeah. Those puppets were weird. They were scary. I didn't like them.
Yeah, but they were part of a British TV show. That was a political parody TV show.
Well, I get the feeling that TV show would have given me nightmares as a child.
Yeah, some British shows would definitely do that.
Hey, did you watch Dinosaurs? The last episode it might have given you nightmares.
Oh, yeah. That was an extremely dark and tragic ending to that show.
Are we going to die?
Yes.
Yes, and it's all your fault.
the entire arc of that show was protect your planet or else you'll destroy it. and that is such a Jim Hansen thing. I mean, even if he was dead at the time that episode came out, that is extremely Jim Hansen.
And to think people thought it was a ripoff of The Simpsons. Nope.
But Rock Band. Back to Rock Band. I like the guitar. I like the drum, and I like the idea behind it. I like the idea that you can download if you don't have a song on there that you like. You can go to the freaking either PS Network or Xbox Live, and probably find at least a couple songs off the album you're looking for, and that's cool.
And a lot of those were free because every week it was every Wednesday, was it? It's like Rock Band Wednesday, and every Wednesday they would come out with three tracks and one free track, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, they supported this game as far as they could. And they supported this game just about as far as it could possibly go. Like, I remember people skipped work and school for Beatles Rock Band.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you something. The opening cutscene and the closing cutscene of Beatles Rock Band is one of the best cutscenes I've ever seen in my 45 years of playing video games. Of course, in 1972, I was born in 70, and I first played my first video game in 72, the Magnavox Odyssey, which was basically a lot of Pong. They didn't have any cutscenes, but it perfectly encapsulated everything about the Beatles and everything all the changes they went in just 10 years of existence. Actually, less than 10 years. It was 7 years. People don't seem to forget. The Beatles, I think, started in 1962 as a Liverpool, bar band. And they reached the greatest heights. And then in 1970, they broke up. That was 8 years. Just 8 years. that's an incredibly short period of time. I don't care what bands, you know, come and go. That was really short.
I think the only thing that was like sort of a lost opportunity for the Rock Band, because as we know, the music games died out for a long time. Like they reached a critical mass, and then the bottom dropped out, and people stopped buying them. Probably because it was $200 to get a set of Rock Band game. Like,
no, it was $140. But yeah, although I will say this, I'm also a bit, and you probably wouldn't guess this of me, I was also a very, very big fan of DDR, and I shelled out $200 for two professional dance pads.
We've still got our dance pads here, too. My wife loves those rhythm games.
Yeah, but I was able to start doing... You know, I really should get back into that, because, you know, the original DDR for the Xbox 360 actually included sort of like a workout program.
Oh, yeah, those games will make you sweat.
Yeah, well, that's why I want to sweat again.
Yeah, I never played Rock Band, and that price tag was definitely a reason.
Well, you can just get it for $60 and, you know, and that's one of the great things about Rock Band, by the way, was that Harmonix said, oh, yeah, you can use a Guitar Hero with guitars if you want to. So they didn't tack on that extra expense if you didn't want it.
Mm. Still, that getting that set was a deterrent for a lot of people, me and Scott included.
Yep.
But there is a lot of you know what, there are lost opportunities there. You know what would have been as good, if not maybe even a little, you know, it would have at least been on par with Beatles Rock Band, David Bowie
Lego
Rock
Band. And it was actually great.
Oh my god,
David Bowie Rock Band.
Lego Rock
Band.
Wasn't
there a Michael Jackson one?
No,
I
they
can't
had Green
remember.
Day. And they had Aerosmith. Was it Aerosmith that they also had?
They did Aerosmith Guitar Hero.
Right. And they also did. There was also a Green Day Rock Band.
What a waste.
But here's the thing: Lego Rock Band had stuff that was really fun, like Kung Fu Fighting.
Can you imagine though, going through the eras and styles and different decades of David Bowie and one full Rock Band game?
Yeah, that's what they did with Aerosmith.
I think that it would have killed if the music game industry could have stayed alive long enough. Harmonix has actually made a comeback recently, though. They released a game called Drop Mix, which is essentially similar. It's DJ Hero, but with trading cards.
Let's talk about DJ Hero for a moment, because that was actually one of the most creative and highly regarded of the music games, but it sold almost nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it came with that really interesting
two turntables.
And actually all these different types of knobs to change the sounds and everything, and faders, toners, all that stuff.
Yeah, because you were doing mashups. Basically what DJ Hero was doing, you were doing mashups.
Which was slick. Like I knew actual DJs that were like, that's a good way to learn the basics of that.
Yeah. There's also, let's not forget, Rock Band on handhelds, which was interesting. I remember the Guitar Hero one you had to attach a special peripheral to your Game Boy.
It was on DS, and it was a complete and utter mess and failure.
But they did create a Rock Band that required no instruments, and that was actually a free-to-play game. I think it was also they turned it into a Facebook game too.
I can't remember.
Yeah. Oh, a Rock Band Blitz.
Ah. Yeah. But Drop Mix is relatively new. Drop Mix came out last year, and essentially you get a pack of cards and you mix certain samples of different tracks on this card deck, where it's essentially just like you pull one card off, put new cards on, and try to make the best mashup you can.
Yeah, you know, Rock Band and Guitar Hero came back for this generation, and almost nothing was said about it. It was almost quietly shipped into stores as if in secret. It's like, oh, there's a new Rock Band. Oh, there's a new Guitar Hero, and I heard nothing about it.
Yeah, I only heard about Drock Mix because I have quite a few friends that play it. But these games, like, they just don't get the momentum that they had back in like 2006, 2007.
Yeah, I remember when Rock Band, I think it was number two, came with it. They issued a new peripheral that was a keyboard.
Yes.
So, anyways, we're going to move on to game news, and this one's depressing for me. System Shock Reboot, that raised $1.3 million in Kickstarter, is now on quote-unquote hiatus. This comes to us from Polygon. Night Dive Studios' remake of System Shock has been put on hiatus, according to the company statement obtained by Polygon, and was due to sent to Kickstarter, and is due to be sent to Kickstarter backers today, which was yesterday. The game has been funded by a $1.3 million campaign, which attracted 21,625 backers, including me. And I was one of the heavy backers. If I remember correctly, I backed it for $125. In a statement from Night Dive, CEO Stephen Kick wrote, "I have put the team on hiatus while we reassess our path so we can return to our vision. We're taking a break but not ending the project. System Shock is going to be completed and all of our promises fulfilled." And, the thing I'm going to add to that is bullshit. The Kickstarter campaign took place in the summer of 2016. Night Dive was giving progress updates to backers as recently as January, when the studio posted a concept art video. The game was originally scheduled to be released at the end of 2017. A source familiar with the project, speaking on condition of anonymity, told Polygon that mission creep and unrealistic ambitions had eaten up the Kickstarter funds, something that Night Dive has largely confirmed. In an interview with Polygon, Director of Business Development Larry Cooperman said that a strategy to pitch the game to developers in order to secure more funding had not been successful. He had added that around 15 contract workers will no longer be working on the game, but Night Dive is not laying off any of the full-time staff. Cooperman also said that he was speaking with various publishers about funding. But that Night Dive's vision and ambition did not meet with market expectations. A shiny new thing comes along and gets added to the project, he said, and our developers wanted to add their own ideas. The vision expanded. After the hiatus, said Cooperman, the development will begin again, with some of the creators of the original demo, which attracted so much interest on Kickstarter, likely returning to work on the project. When pressed for a timeline, he estimated the game's release at 18 to 24 months from now. So let's talk about mission feature creep. For those who don't know, one of the reasons why Daikatana was so awful was feature creep. They kept on seeing, oh, they're using the Quake 2 engine. Oh, this. Oh, that. We need to add this, that. You know, it's what happened to Duke Nukem Forever. And I can tell you exactly what they saw and they wanted included in the game. And that is VR support and motion controls. Now,
that definitely doesn't fit their budget.
Here's the thing that people want from System Shock. They want System Shock. It's a remaster. You don't even have to. You already have a lot of the level design already done. You have the voice acting done. Everything, a lot of it, it's not like they're building a new game from scratch.
Yeah, it's really disappointing to hear about this, especially when it comes out of actual people that have made games before and should know.
They're the ones who are responsible for Baldur's Gate Remastered and all those others.
No, that's Beamdog.
No, Night Dive. I know Night Dive Studios has been doing other things.
They, let me think. They released the
System Shock Enhanced Edition.
Yeah.
They also
and
do
System Shock 2.
They do remasters. They were the ones who did all the Wizardry remasters and Seventh Guest, 11th Hour. Did all the Tex Murphy remasters. They did the colonization remaster.
It's just disappointing because, like, you gotta have boundaries. You gotta know when to say, no, we have what we need already, and let's stick to that, and let's get it done. Because here's the thing. Once you launch the game, and people start paying money for it, and if it does well, then you can start thinking about VR support.
And doing stuff like expansion packs.
Exactly. You know why VR support didn't come with Doom or Fallout 4? Mm-hmm. Is because they probably figured, hey, we'll make money on these things, and we can probably do that later.
Well, the other thing is that they also had to change the game radically to make a VR version of Doom. you know, now it's just moving from point to point to point instead of actually moving. And when you want to turn around, it, like, yeah, you press a button to turn 180.
Yeah, good thing they didn't do anything like that when they were actually developing the game. Night Dive Studios.
You know, they're cooperating with another developer to do System Shock 3.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest, I'd rather see System Shock 3 than a remake of System Shock. I mean, yeah, well, System Shock remake, but I'm just saying, you know, I'm more interested in that they don't make System Shock 3 suck.
The other thing that I wanted to mention is that why would you want to just, like, throw all sorts of weird bells and whistles on it besides a graphical update? Not System Shock 1 has been out of the collective conscious for quite a while.
System Shock 1 has not been in the collective conscious. No one knew about it in 1994, except for some Mac owners.
And, yeah, there you go. I mean, how refreshing would it have been to just see this game modernized in of itself? Nothing out of the ordinary.
Demo.
Nothing.
I mean, the demo is what people wanted. What they got in the demo is what they wanted.
Exactly.
Something that didn't look like ass, had real mouse look.
Controlled well.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about playing System Shock 1 was it was made for a Macintosh, and it was just terrible in terms of controls. It was all keyboards and no mouse look. That was terrible. At least when you're playing now, it's like playing the original XCOM with its original controls. It's like trying to push something up a wet rope. You know, it's like impossible.
Trying to push something up a wet rope?
Whatever. I botched the thing.
Limp spaghetti noodle, maybe.
Yeah, something like that. I'm just saying it's incredibly... playing XCOM, the original XCOM with its controls, is just depressing. It's just hard to do.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, if you just made this game, like, look pretty and playable for a new generation, that's what people want. That's what people want. That's what people bought into your Kickstarter for.
Yeah, I'm looking up to see what the Kickstarter page to see what I yeah, oh god. So I pledged $150.
Ouch.
See, here's the thing. I pledged $830 to Psychonauts 2. But at least I know that's coming along. Now if something happens to Psychonauts 2, then I'll be really upset.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, I'm pretty sure you're gonna get Psychonauts 2.
Yeah. But well, you never know because Double Fine hasn't had a great record with Kickstarter either. I mean here's the thing: not many people were satisfied with what came out of Broken Age.
Was that the one with the two?
Yeah, that's Shay and Vella, if I remember correctly. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I like the ending, but the game itself, you know, it takes more than Jack Black.
It did come out, though. That's what I'm talking about. It came out.
No, Scott, here's the thing. They ran out of money, so they split the game up into two parts while they sold the game again on early access to earn more money.
Yeah, well, that is bad. But again, it came out. There are still, like, Project Phoenix is probably never coming out, for example.
Well, yeah, here's the thing. That... You know, Night Dive knows what they're doing. I think that System Shock's going to come out. I just, you know, it's just going to take a lot longer. I mean, my estimated delivery is December 2017.
I'm waiting for Here Are You, which did a second Kickstarter to keep it going because they fumbled their development because they tried to do it 2D because they thought 2D was cheaper, and then they found out that 3D was actually cheaper nowadays. And I think there were some other issues they had programmed.
You know what? Here's the thing.
There were some difficulties there.
It's demonstrably proven now that we care less about graphics than ever before. Because
really,
people love retro games which have 8-bit graphics. you know? We don't really care that much about how your game looks as much as how it plays. Because if you're going to tell me Undertale will tax your computer...
Oh, yeah, Undertale. Yeah, that's pretty low bit, I would say.
You know? Or Shovel Knight.
Yeah.
I mean, fun, fun is in the gameplay, you know? Look at N++. Oh, no, wait, what's the name of that game John was alone? Or Thomas was alone? What was the name of the game Thomas was alone?
Never heard of it.
That game, you know what you play? You play a pixel. You play a pixel, and you're hopping around
blocks. Simple as you get.
What?
That's as simple as you can get, I guess. See how
you play a single,
pixel?
And you're leaping around boxes, you know, like rectangles and all that stuff. Yeah, you don't, you know. Do you remember that game? I forgot the name of it, in which you have to navigate a dot through all these flashing patterns, and the later levels are just impossible, and you're amazed that anybody can do it.
Yeah,
Hexagon. TJ, we covered it on Game Watcher. We should remember this.
Wait. Oh,
the Hexagon Action Puzzler.
Hexagon Action
Puzzle. I'm trying to it wasn't Hexagon. It wasn't Hexler. Anyways, but you've seen it before, right? It's sort of
I
like
I think so.
There's just these patterns and you have to navigate your navigate a little dot so that it doesn't touch the patterns. And
the hardest levels are sort of like, how does anybody ever play
that?
Yeah, I can't remember anything like that for a while. That may have been either before or after, or maybe before my time there.
No, this is a recent game. Super Hexagon.
Super Hexagon.
Just watch some of the videos of Super Hexagon. That is just a game with patterns. But it is about as hardcore a game as you're ever going to see. Watch any video of Super Hexagon, and you'll be like, how do they play this? Unless you're not playing a dungeon on a little triangle.
Yeah, I'm getting agitated just looking at this.
Anyway, let's talk about some more happier news. Go ahead with the next item, TJ.
Dragon Ball FighterZ's premium DLC character is revealed from Polygon. Dragon Ball FighterZ's next two characters will be Broly and Bardock, according to Bandai Namco in an announcement in the Japanese magazine V-Jump. The two characters will become available as premium DLC, although their availability date and price were not announced. Broly and Bardock duked it out in 2015's Dragon Ball Xenoverse and Dragon Ball Xenoverse 2 the next year, which may be why they're showing up together here. Muscle-bound Broly packs a gigantic meteor super attack that uses up 3 bars from the energy gauge. Bardock's super special is the Revenger Assault, which transforms him into a Super Saiyan and rains down fury upon whoever is facing him. Silicon Era notes that anyone with Dragon Ball Xenoverse 2, presumably on the same platform, will also get additional Android 21 costumes and accessories within Dragon Ball FighterZ. Dragon Ball Xenoverse 2 launched on PlayStation 4, Windows PC, and Xbox One. It is available on the Dragon Ball Xenoverse 2 launched on PlayStation 4, Windows PC, and Xbox One. Dragon Ball FighterZ is available on the same platforms. This is cool. I think a lot of people sort of figured that Broly and Bardock were going to be, if not the next characters, then forthcoming, because there's supposed to be 6 fighters coming all together in the first run of DLC.
He's the blonde dude, right?
Which one?
Broly.
Broly is the giant muscle-bound blonde one with the necklace.
and Bardock is the green guy? No, he's the guy who looks like an adult Goku or something.
He's Goku's dad. He looks like Goku, but like in a Freedom Fighter outfit or something. he was exploded by Frieza when they blew up his planet. So we never got to see Bardock as a Super Saiyan. So this will be interesting. And yes, they have been in Xenoverse and they have expanded like what they do and who and what they've done. But Xenoverse, I don't know. There's a difference between the cel-shaded graphics in Xenoverse and what they're doing in Dragon Ball FighterZ, because everything that Arc System Works has done with Dragon Ball FighterZ is legitimately very faithful to the style of the anime and the style of the manga. And so it all looks very authentic. I like the animations and everything they do with Dragon Ball FighterZ, and I really am I'm really excited to see how they do with Broly and Bardock.
Android 21 is the chick.
Yes. She's the red-haired new character they made for the game that also turns into a Majin.
Which is probably... I wonder how many people are going to pick up Xenoverse 2 just to get her.
What is a Majin?
Boo, that big, fat, pink guy that turns people into food and eats them.
Oh.
He's a big, chunky, pink guy with a very high, squeaky voice and a cape.
I guess I don't really know anything about Dragon Ball. I'm sorry I asked.
Just consider yourself lucky. Just so you know, I leave all the tapes together. If you want to watch all the seasons ever of Dragon Ball Z, is 700 hours.
Mm.
700 you only need to watch it. People screaming.
I don't even want to rewatch Dark Shadows, and that's like 1,000 episodes.
The original Dragon Ball is super fun to watch. It's like
first season, yeah.
No, I'm talking about the show before Dragon Ball Z, the mm-hmm. one that started it all. Dragon Ball was like a super fun. Yeah, it was a super fun adventure show, and it was less about fighting and more about like just like exploring the world and finding the Dragon Balls.
Well, wasn't it there supposed was to be arts? About how Goku was conflicted about fighting? I mean, he was sort of like a little coward or something like that. I don't remember.
Goku has always been a sort of curious little monkey boy that wants to punch things. He's always been very simple, always been very chipper.
Yes, but I'm talking about the original Dragon Ball here.
Yeah, he was like that in the original Dragon Ball, too.
That's what I meant. Keep in mind, I can't watch Dragon Ball Z for more than 2 minutes before it just makes me want to claw my eyes out. It makes Power Rangers look like I, Claudius.
The original Dragon Ball is much more fun. Dragon Ball Z, after a certain point is just two guys screaming and flexing until one of them explodes.
And making up powers as they go along.
But Dragon Ball was legitimately about exploring the world of this world of mythology and dinosaurs and living and cat people and learning martial arts and finding the Dragon Balls.
Are any of them blue?
Nah.
No, the gold.
You asked for it, you got it. Let's just get back to the game itself. So you were already talking about how you were part of, you know, you're doing ranked matches. Have they been discussing this in the official forums?
I don't really check the forums that much. I just do my own thing.
I mean, well, let's forget forums, just random chatter.
So most of my friends that play the game are extremely interested in how Broly is going to play, because in most of the... Broly is like considered to be one of the best Dragon Ball villains of all time. I don't really get it, but everybody loves him. He was the first Super Saiyan, whenever any of those guys transform into a blonde haired dude.
Yeah. So here's a question for you though. Does Dragon Ball Fighter C have the same, you know, pre fight interactions like in Injustice 2?
There are some.
Okay. There's some.
If you have like specific characters, then they'll have specific openings, and if you end the match a certain way, there will also be specific victory endings.
Okay, because you know, Injustice 2 makes sure that everybody has some, even if there are sometimes repeated lines. It always seems like no matter who you're going to play with, there's going to be interaction, you know?
Oh, yeah. Like, characters like, that have history with each other, like Goku, if he fights against his son, Gohan, they'll have specific character dialogue. Same with Krillin and fighting against Android 18, since their husband and wife.
I'm just assuming that Broly's going to have a lot of conversations with everybody.
That would be cool, and it'll be interesting to see what they decide to do with, like, sometimes when you have characters, certain characters match up, they do different animations at the beginning. Like, for instance, with Krillin and this other character Nappa, they were one of the first Saiyans that came to Earth, and they use these little green Cybermen that are basically
what is it, now Doctor Who.
So the Cybermen are little weird creatures that grow out of seeds and jump and latch onto people and explode.
Okay.
And that produced the scene that everyone laughs about with the Yamcha dying first. If you've ever seen the picture of the dude in the orange gi just laying dead in a crater, that's Yamcha. And if you do Krillin versus Nappa, Krillin will just have this animation where he just fires a beam that scatters and destroys all of the Cybermen. And that was in respect to actual episodes in the anime. So there are fun things like that between certain characters that just happen.
Did he also fight Daleks?
No, they don't. Okay. I don't think they pull from the Doctor Who lore too much.
I don't know how big Doctor Who is in Japan. It'd be interesting.
I'm not entirely satisfied though. I'm waiting for two particular characters to come.
Which ones?
I want Raditz. I want Goku's brother, because then I'll have Bardock, Goku, and Raditz for a team. Father son.
Okay.
Father cool. And sons. And then I also want a new character that came out of Dragon Ball Super, Caulifla, which she's basically an ultra dimension equivalent of Goku, and she's Girl Goku. She's pretty much she is super powerful, never quits, continues to get stronger, and she's like everything that Goku is, but girl from another dimension. And I think that's actually kind of cool.
I'm betting you're a huge, huge fan of Dragon Ball Evolution.
Which one? The live action movie? Oh god,
no. I know everybody's opinion about the live action movie. I was just trolling you a little bit. Just have grandpa eat bugs.
All I'm gonna say is, if you ever have the chance to watch an episode of the original Dragon Ball, do it. It's fun. It's much more fun than most of the Dragon Ball stuff that you probably know of.
Hey, you know, it could have been worse. It could have been directed by M. Night Shyamalan.
Yeah. He did an atrocity making that Last Airbender movie. Yeah. It just was terrible.
Oh God.
If you thought that was an atrocity, just watch. Like, it makes the Mortal Kombat movies look really, really good.
They're great.
The Mortal Kombat movies are great in of themselves.
They're
no different.
But they actually have a plot.
I will hear.
They actually have a plot, and they have characters that don't make you want to slap them in the face. And I think, didn't Highlander appear in it?
Yes.
I forgot his name.
Yes, he did. Actor.
Yeah. What's his name? I forgot.
He was Raiden.
Oh, no, I meant the actor's name.
Christopher Lambert. Christopher Lambert.
Christopher Lambert. Yeah. He was out of commission for a while because of he was sick. You know, it's nice to see that he returned. The actor, I mean.
Yeah.
Anyways, we're gonna move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
Alright. This one is rumor, Diablo 3 is coming to Nintendo Switch. This is from Shack News. The just-announced Burnout Paradise remaster is missing a Nintendo Switch edition, but there's also some potentially good news to be found elsewhere. Rumor has it Diablo 3 may be coming to Nintendo Switch, with a local co-op option for some portable dungeon crawling. The rumor comes from NeoSeeker via an unnamed source. The source only shared that Blizzard is looking to implement the local co-op feature, and publication hasn't received any additional comment from the developer just yet. Blizzard hasn't officially joined the Nintendo Switch party yet, though they did not rule out the Hearthstone on home mobile hybrid console.
Yeah, Hearthstone would actually be perfect for the Switch. You know, a nice little CCG game. But yeah, Diablo 2 has been out since 6 years ago. And the funny thing is that it feels like it's been out longer than that. Diablo 3 feels so old. I don't know. It doesn't seem like a game that's, oh yeah, that was out just, you know, that was out a long time. No, it feels like it's even, oh, it feels like it was out 15 years ago.
I think that's just because, I mean, nobody ever took a break from playing Diablo 2.
No. Diablo 3, it wasn't really that good.
Diablo 3 was so not really that good that people continued to play Diablo 2 well after Diablo 3 was out.
Yeah. But then again,
how do you improve upon perfection?
By having real money stores in the game.
Mm.
Or auction houses, I'm sorry. They're real money auction houses.
Yeah, that was a thing.
Yeah. I mean, at some point I would like to see a Diablo 4, you know, and have the game done right. Cause even without all that stuff, just Diablo 3 didn't feel right.
Yeah.
There was something off about it.
There was a definite style to Diablo 2 and Diablo 1. Maybe it was just the nostalgia factor. Maybe it was just sort of that.
No, it wasn't the nostalgia factor, no. It just didn't feel like... And it wasn't the graphics either. It wasn't like the graphics are too good. We preferred having looked at crap at 800 by 600. No, it just... You know, I think it was a level layout. I think it was there that. I mean, in first Diablo and second Diablo, you just had one place where you commiserated, you know, before you went out. And this one was just all over the place. I didn't need to walk through a town, you know, and talking to 2 billion people. No, I need are, like, 3 people, and that's it. That's all I want to talk about. I want to talk to the person who sells stuff, Deckard, and the person who sells weaponry and potions. That's it.
Yeah,
that's all I really need.
And you're right. That, I mean, that is the appeal of the first Diablo to me, is that it's literally confined to a church, and then you just go as far down into hell as you can go. The first game is the church.
No, I'm sorry. No, the first game was in a town, but it was a small, Tristram, and they went into a church, right? And the second game, you went out in the countryside, but it might as well have been, you know, you're not going down. You're just, instead of going vertically, you're just going horizontally.
Mm-hmm. I do like that in the first game, though, is that you're literally just confined to that one town, and then there's the church, and you just go as far
down into the church.
Uh-huh.
Keep going down.
There's something claustrophobic about that, and it really made a good feeling for that game.
No, it isn't.
It never felt claustrophobic to me.
You know, it felt directed. You know, like you were given a direction to go, and you had to go in that direction. You can go at your own pace.
That is claustrophobic to me, though, compared to Diablo 3, where you can just go over wherever the hell you feel like going.
It's just that you talk to too many people. It's just too many people there, you know? And I didn't really care about Tyrael.
Mm-hmm.
Who cares about Tyrael? Who cares? The only person I care about is Deckard Cain and a shopkeeper. That's it. I don't need anything else.
Yeah.
But anyways, so getting back to the story, yeah, I think it would be a good fit for the Switch, Diablo 3. I mean, you know, it's a serious game.
Yeah.
You know, but it's also well-worn shoes that it's not going to be taxing on the system, and it's sort of like, yeah, you just go over here and hit things.
I feel like the difference in transition to Diablo 3 is that it stopped feeling like its own thing and started feeling more like every other action-adventure RPG that has ever been made.
Mm. Or, well, here's the thing. A lot of those copied Diablo, so it feels like a copy of a game that's copying Diablo.
Mm-hmm.
And also,
it's sort of like it's that conversation I had about Assassin's Creed Origins a while back when I noted that It kind of looks like Assassin's Creed Origins is taking from the Breath of the Wild climbing mechanics, but Breath of the Wild climbing mechanics probably took from the original Assassin's Creed. And it's like, who's copying who?
You know, the other thing is that a couple of years ago, and I think we discussed this, and actually you and I discussed it, but not on the podcast, because I remember posting articles on Game Watcher about it where people were coming out and talking about how badly development was mishandled and how many directives they had from on high. And that's probably why I feel so generic, is because the developers were being told what to do instead of developers just developing a good game.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, that is the issue I think that Diablo 3 has, is that it just feels generic compared to a lot of the first two.
Yeah, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. If you enjoy feedback, leave us comments on our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave some iTunes comments. Scott disappeared off the face of the earth. I don't know how much he would have talked about a 30-terabyte solid-state drive anyway. So you can find me at Jonah Falcon. You can find Scott at Alpha Shard. And you can find me at Johnny TJ Chugs. Johnny Chugs, all on Twitter. Just send us the tweets, and hopefully this podcast recorded well. At least we have backup, so if I find that only half the conversation was recorded, I'm pretty sure that you'll have it down.
Yes.
It's just weird. I don't know what happened to that. It would only record half the conversation. Just strange.
Well, I haven't had any issues with my audio capture software so far, so if you need a backup, I've got it.
There's something wrong.
Okay.
Anyways, we can't do the Star Trek now. We'll have to do it later. And I guess that allows you to watch the last 10 minutes and listen to Tasha's self-eulogy.
I have a lot of thoughts on it already. There is it's an interesting episode, I'll say that much.
Yeah. And I can put it in perspective when we talk about it and whenever that is. Anyways, we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone. Play games, have fun, be cool.
And that's that. Bye-bye.